Thank you. We're joined as usual by Rhode Island Public Radio political analyst Scott McKay. Hello, Scott.
Good morning, Rhode Island.
And University of Rhode Island political science professor Maureen Moakley. Good morning, Maureen.
Good morning, everyone.
We're pleased to welcome back as our special guest, physician, educator, talk show host Pablo Rodriguez. Thanks for joining us, Pablo.
Saludos, amigos.
We should also note Pablo is a member of our board here at Rhode Island Public Radio. The White House has suffered a self-inflicted wound with the rollout of Obamacare. The healthcare initiative has been plagued by technical glitches, and it's attracted far lower than expected participation. Scott, what do you say about why this has gone so wrong, and how's the outlook for getting it on track?
Well, there's a lot of reasons. I look at this as a tale of two websites. There are the states that have set up their own websites, including Rhode Island, and it seems to be working much better in those states. Then the states where mainly Republican governors, where they've decided they are not going to cooperate with this. They're not going to increase their Medicaid. And what's happening is those states have very poor participation. Look, the president and his administration deserve a lot of blame for the way this was rolled out. But let's go back to Massachusetts when they set up their system, which is working pretty well now. In the first month in Massachusetts, only a few hundred people signed up. By the end of the year, they had 37,000 participants. So there's a long way to go in this.
Pablo, as a physician, you're on the front lines of healthcare. How do you evaluate how this has gone down?
It's been really, really difficult because what happens is when you have all this bad press about the website, it translates throughout the whole country. So we even have people here in Rhode Island have nothing to do with the federal website that are not signing on because they think it's broken. So the news cycle is really affecting this, and it's becoming a self-fulfilling prophecy. As soon as the news become a little bit better in terms of the website is fixed or working better, I think that the numbers will increase, and definitely by December 15th, when the deadline arrives and people realize that they have to get some kind of insurance, I think the numbers are going to increase. But there's no doubt about it that the administration has bungled the rollout. They didn't test adequately the software programs, and they didn't have somebody in charge. There was never a single person or individual in charge of the entire creation of this site.
Maureen, how do you see the outlook for overhauling what has been a very problem-plagued rollout of Obamacare?
Well, I agree with what's already been said. I mean, we have to keep in mind that all of these big social programs have met with resistance, and the resistance is particularly strong on the part of the GOP because they see this as a way of, you know, getting back at Obama and getting some leverage, particularly with the elections coming up. One of the things that you touched on, and I think it's very important, we're going to start to hear some positive stories. I was heartened by the story about musicians who now can get health insurance coverage, and that's a really big and important segment of the population that never had that kind of opportunity. So I think when we start hearing these, when the rollout perfects itself, when we start hearing these positive stories, eventually we'll get to the point where people accept it. But Pablo is right. There's going to be resistance because of the bad beginning.
Money from the state pension fund is being used to defend a lawsuit over the state pension overhaul of 2011. Public employee unions are crying foul about this, but State Treasurer Gina Raimondo says it's legal and right to use the money for that purpose. Meanwhile, State Senator Frank Chacone, a union official, is calling on the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission to review changes to Rhode Island's pension. How is this playing, Maureen, and how do you see the outlook for upholding the billions in liability that were shaved off the pension in 2011?
Well, first of all, of course she's got to defend the lawsuit. I mean, what do people expect? And of course it's going to cost money. And about $400,000, given the stakes involved, are really pretty small. So I'm really surprised that this is such a big deal. But my sort of sense of this whole thing is the union establishment has like a weekly hit. And there's a script out here. And once a week, there'll be some negative kind of press. And this will in fact drive up her negatives. And so they may be successful, but nonetheless, as far as this, as far as these particular charges are concerned, of course she has to defend it, and she's statutorily obliged to use the money from the fund. So I don't see what the fuss is about there.
How about Maureen's point, Scott? Is this just a union effort to undermine the pension overhaul of 2011?
Well, there's obviously a political calculation here. We all know that. On the other hand, I'm reminded when I was a young reporter in Vermont years ago, and there were these two farmers fighting over a cow, a calf, in the field, which field it had been born in. And finally, one farmer one day started pulling the back end of the cow. The other one pulled the front end of the cow. Pretty soon, somebody went into town and got each of their lawyers. And sure enough, the lawyers showed up, and you know what they did. They started milking the cow. Now, lawyers always get paid, even in bankruptcies, even in this situation. And this is just the normal thing. You look at the Curt Schilling mess. Where do we look at the legal bills on that? And yes, they're going to be high.
But lawyers didn't initiate this. It was initiated by the unions.
Pablo, it took years and years to get to the point where Rodon made a major effort to overhaul its pension plan. Do you think that's going to stand up, especially with the ongoing mediation and the possibility of it being kicked back to the General Assembly?
I think something is going to stand. There's no way that we can go back to the previous system. The system was bankrupt. The system was not able to pay for their obligations. And my concern right now is something that Maureen just mentioned about the image that the state could have in terms of its finances and in terms of their bond ratings and all the things that can happen if all of a sudden something blows up in terms of our pension or in terms of our obligations. Well, that could be very dangerous.
Don't forget, there's always a deal. There's a way if you could probably take, say, put the COLAs back on a small piece, maybe the first $10,000, the first $12,000. I think something like that may emerge.
Absolutely.
Elsewhere in the land of contentious financial issues, the Providence City Council is planning to review the kind of tax discounts that have been offered to encourage development in the capital city over time. These benefits have been bestowed to such entities as Providence Place Mall and GTech. Pablo, what do you say? Is it worth it to use massive tax discounts to encourage development, particularly when Providence has such high commercial taxes, or is this a boondoggle?
Listen, everybody's doing it. All the cities and states are trying to attract investment, and some investments would not happen if those tax treaties didn't exist. I think that the mayor, Mayor Taveras, deserves a lot of credit because he wants to create a process for doing this as opposed to who your contacts are or who your lawyer is. And he wants to make sure that this is done in an organized way using formulas and using requirements that make the playing field more leveled, because we know that in Rhode Island, the playing field has not been leveled when it comes to these kinds of treaties.
Oh, you're kidding. Scott, how should tax stabilizations and the like fit into a city's economic toolbox?
Well, Pablo's right in one respect. There is a race to the bottom as cities and states vie for these various developments. And one of the problems is, how long do you leave them there? I think a lot of people now look at the success of the Providence Place Mall and realize that, yes, we needed that inducement to bring these folks here, but stabilizing their taxes for 17 years,
yeah.
I mean, that's an awfully long time, and no other business in this town can get that kind of a deal. So I think we need to take a look. I think the mayor's on the right track. Take a look at these things and see what we can do.
What do you say, Maureen?
I say that you can't go downtown and see the renewal that's gone on down there without being astounded, and that would not have happened without these tax incentives. But I agree with Pablo. I agree that the mayor is doing a good job. It's not the incentives. It's that they've got to be evaluated, monitored, and you've got to have a systematic way of either, you know, giving out these grants, if you will, or tax refunds, if you will, and then judging how long you have to put them into place. And so I think we're on the right track. But nothing of these sort would have happened. If you go down to downtown, it's amazing, that transformation. And it's as a result of these policies.
We're very short on time. So, Maureen, give me 15 seconds on how newly announced lieutenant governor candidate Dan McKee, the mayor of Cumberland, matches up against his expected Democratic rival, Secretary of State Ralph Mollis.
I think it can be very competitive. Mollis has been a good Secretary of State. There's a fairly effective machine in North Providence and East Providence that he can probably tap into, that he may get union support. On the other hand, in a broad statewide primary, Dan McKee has a base, and he'll probably do well in suburban areas.
Pablo, 15 seconds.
I think it'll be a competitive race, and I think the Elizabeth Roberts has really demonstrated that that position can be very effective.
What do you say, Scott?
I think it's time to twin these races and make sure that the governor and the lieutenant governor of the same party, we saw with Don Carcieri and Elizabeth Roberts, the one time he went, I believe, to the Middle East to visit the troops, and there was a snowstorm. He didn't even tell the lieutenant governor he was out of the country.
That's right, and we're out of time, so we'll have to leave it there. Thanks for joining us, Scott.
Thank you.
Maureen.
Thank you.
And Pablo Rodriguez.
Hasta pronto, amigos.
We're funded by you, our listeners, and by the Robertson Foundation, continuing the commitment of its founder, Stephen Hamblett, to honest government in Rhode Island through in-depth political coverage. And if you enjoyed the conversation, please visit our On Politics blog at ripr.org and consider a donation to public radio during our pledge drive.